A volatile week of trade wrapped up with traders back on the buy side of the market. Cotton was slow to start and ended up posting new contract highs. That was along with new highs in the soybeans. Even with energy futures backing away from the highs of the day, grain futures generally closed near session highs.
Live from the land where a good mule works as hard as a paddle boat, but doesn't get as far. Via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a conversation with Ben Cash from Bauer Trading. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. Yeah, man, we're down here at the Midland Empire Ag and Rural Lifestyle Show, St. Joseph, Missouri. The fine people here at KFEQ are making
KFEQ.
Me feel very comfortable and right at home here at the Farm Show in St. Joe. So really good stuff. Hey, what a day. What a way to wrap up this market. You know what I mean? This whole week was an up and down roller coaster affair. And to come back and to close with the strength that we had across the board in the grains, even with corn trading higher, the livestock futures and feeder cattle, we couldn't hold them back. It was a really good day, Davis.
Well, as Mark Twain probably never said, if mules could talk, it would likely be man would be pulling the plow. Am I right?
That's all it would take? That's all it would take. You know, what about Mr. Ed? Did Mr. Ed live in the house, or did Mr. Ed stay out in the barn? I don't know.
Well, maybe he liked it in the barn. I'd kind of prefer to be in a barn sometimes myself.
It's a good thing for you, too, because, you know, that's where you're going to end up anyway.
Hey-o! KFEQ!
Love it, love it, love it. Let's get to some of the details, because we've got some weekly changes that I want to talk about in these markets today, too.
Roger that, big fella. Well, after back-to-back sharply lower closes, March soft red winter wheat futures opened near support at yesterday's low of 774 and recovered to trade solidly higher today. Front month soft wheat futures posted a 57.5 cent trading range this week, but the contract basically made a round trip to end the week with just modest gains. Concerns that Russian troops are preparing to make their way into Ukraine has created a highly volatile market for wheat. The greatest concern is that any conflict could shut off supplies from the Black Sea region. Another risk, Chip, is a conflict would result in global sanctions against Russia that could force wheat importers to seek supplies from other exporters.
Yep.
March hard red winter wheat futures 8.75 cents higher, 8.02 1/4. March soft red wheat gained 9 1/4, 7.86 1/4. March spring wheat closed at 9.20 1/4, up 17.75 cents. Chip.
Davis, back in 2014, when this show was just getting up and running,
I remember
we were talking every day about the Russian threat to Ukraine, and we talked about it for months, Davis. This could last for a long, long time yet, right?
At least till after the Olympics would be my thought.
Oh, until after the Olympics. Well, that is coming right up here. So you think we see some movement by the Russians into you? You know, when you if you listen to what President Biden said, he was using words like, you know, it's imminent and it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. So why wait any longer, huh?
Well, I think a two front sort of a conflict thing with the China deal. I think they wait and they go at the same time.
Okay.
I think.
Interesting.
It's possible. I'll say it's possible.
Yeah. March corn futures. Interesting. It's an interesting thought. March wheat, SRW on the week, up 6.25 cents. March HRW wheat on the week, up 9 cents. And get this, March spring wheat on the week, down 15.75 cents.
Huh. Well, March corn futures opened to slightly lower and on session lows, then rallied to within 3 cents of the May 7 contract high. The contract also respected support at yesterday's low and posted its second highest close. Chart watchers say momentum in the market is still clearly with the bulls, and they are looking for a full test of contract high resistance at 640.5 in the near term. Global corn prices are trading well above U.S. prices, limiting selling interest. The general rally across all commodities contributed to today's price strength, even as equities traded back into positive territory late in the day. Increasing concerns about damage to the South American corn crop potential underpinned the market this week. March corn futures 10 and 3 quarters higher, 636. May corn jumped 10 and a quarter, 633 and a quarter. July corn futures closed at 626 and a quarter, up 10 and 1 quarter on the day. Man, the March is not that far from 640, baby.
No, it's not. 636 on the close on the week, up 19 and 3 quarter cents in that March contract. July corn was up 17 and 3 quarter cents. So a little bit of bull spreading in that market.
Well, a surge in export demand helped soybean futures end of the week with sharp gains. USDA this morning reported Mexico bought nearly 142,000 metric tons of U.S. beans, and that unknown destinations bought almost 252,000 tons of beans for delivery in the current marketing year. It was also announced that China purchased 264,000 metric tons of beans for delivery in 22-23. Late season stress on South American soybeans added support to the bean market. It was also reported that Indonesia established restrictions on palm oil exports, sending palm prices to a record high. That made it easy for the soybean oil market to follow soybean prices to the upside. March beans, 21 and 3 quarter cents higher today, 1470, Chip. May beans up 21 and 1 quarter, 1475 and 1 quarter. July closed at 1473 and a half. That one's up 20. Man, look at the beans go.
Oh, it was a crazy day, Davis, no doubt about it. And the volume is picking up. The momentum is clearly to the upside. This week, the March bean contract closed 55 and 3 quarter cents higher on the week. July beans up 46 and a quarter cents on the week. Big move in the bull spreads, big move in the bean market.
Trade was wild in the cotton market today. The March contract posted a 550-point trading range with the day's high setting a new contract high at 125.60. All told, March cotton today, 213 points higher, 123.76, and July up 136 points to close at 117.87 livestocks. Cash cattle trade was slow this week, but February futures rejected trade below 136 at the start of the week, filled Monday's downside price gap on Wednesday, and wrapped up the week with a challenge of resistance at the Jan 10 high. February cattle 87 and one half cents higher, 138.70. April live cattle up 147 and one half, 143.10. And March feeders up 12 and one half cents, 159.62 and a half. And on the snout side, another close above the mid-July high of 87.87 and one half points. Front month hog futures to a test of psychological resistance at 90 bucks in the near term. February hogs 90 cents higher, 87.92 and a half, and April hogs firmed 25 cents, 94.92 and one half. Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you. You know, that trade in the cotton market, take a look at that on the daily charts, guys. It was absolutely wild, the kind of price range that we saw in there. Almost had an outside. We nearly took out the low of the week and took out the high of the week today, and it was a volatile week. That kind of price action is just, it chops up those traders big time. On the week, March cotton futures up 268 points. February live cattle futures gained 77.5 cents this week. A lot of movement in that market, and ended up not going very far. The gains in the corn market this week, limited buying interest in feeder cattle. March feeder cattle futures this week down $3.67.5. And the February lean hog contract gained 172.5 cents this week. We got a KFEQ regular coming up next. We've got Ben Cash from Bauer Trading up next right here on AgriTalk.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-55.
Yeah, fade that out.
Yeah, quickly. Fade that out. Get rid of that. Mm-hmm. Get rid of that. We don't need that up there. What should they do, Davis?
They should hashtag their tweets, AgriTalk, or you can send an email to hatemail.davis.agritalk.net.
Or we can, too. If you don't want to send the hate mail to Davis, you can always just send us an email at host@agritalk.com. Like I said earlier this week, we're getting more of those emails, Davis. I love it. Keep them coming.
Yep, seriously.
Yeah, very good, very good. You know, before we get Ben in here, Davis, list of demand that USDA announced this morning on the export sales, Mexico in for 142,000, unknown in for 252,000. Those are for the old crop beans. And then China's in there for 264,000 of the new crop. That that's the kind of sign. And that happened in a week when the market was trading higher. Good grief. It almost feels like these importing countries out there are starting to get a little bit more than a little bit concerned about the supplies coming out of South America, doesn't it?
It really does. And then you add to that restrictions on palm oil exports out of Indonesia. We could be looking at oil being a contributing factor to this as well.
Yeah, if oil gets even more engaged in this market, that's really going to be something to see. Let's before we talk any more about what's going on in this soy complex, let's get Ben Cash in here. Ben's a regular on KFEQ, and he's our guest analyst this afternoon right here on AgriTalk. Ben, welcome back. How are you?
Good. How you doing, guys?
We're doing real fine, real fine. So, Ben, just give me your general impression on what's going on in this soy complex. It was a heck of a good week.
Yeah, it really was. You guys already touched on it there. It looks like a lot of these end users are getting a little worried about any kind of supplies coming out of South America. You know, farmers selling not only here in the U.S., but down there has been somewhat tepid. Really don't know what the crop side is going to be. Some of these rains definitely arrived a little bit too late there for the month of January, and there's still a lot of unknowns, a lot of question marks. The crop report here in January was already reducing that crop size, and we can probably see it happen here again on the February 9th report is what it seems like. And then, you know, some other issues out there, geopolitical issues, you know, come about. So, you know, once again, the global grain trade has got a lot of questions marks. So there's a lot of anxiety in this marketplace right now. And it's going to be some time before we work it out.
That's a really good way of putting it, Ben. The anxiety in this marketplace is going up. And when you see that happening, the guys that are in charge of imports in countries like China, in charge of imports at companies in Mexico and all other areas, they've got one job to do, and that is to make sure that they don't run out of soybeans and don't run out of corn. And price matters, yes, get it bought right, but ultimately price doesn't matter. You got to make sure you have it. And when you see the demand show up like this, you start to think those guys are feeling the pressure and the uncertainty of whether or not they're going to get fully covered, right?
Yeah, and also it seems like one bullish news event happens after another here too. You know, that's kind of keeping these markets going. These charts look extremely bullish. We just keep grinding higher, you know, on most commodities across the board. And, you know, like this week, you know, the palm oil situation, restrictions out of Indonesia is a major concern, even though they're forecasting a very good rebound in their crop production in the 2022. But, you know, demand's got to be met, and it seems like near term, there's enough going on that a lot of these importers need to get coverage, and these dips seem to be, they're going to be well supported on dips. Most of these commodities, it seems like here, just a lot of tension out here, a lot of uncertainty with production levels and just the movement of goods. You know, not only just commodity, you know, anything here. There's just a lot of uncertainty out there. So, you know, once again, it seems like one bullish event happens after another, and it's really been quite supportive here.
Yeah. You know, one thing about a South American drought is you don't really. I mean, does a South American drought really happen if it doesn't turn into more demand for U.S. soybeans and U.S. corn? Well, all of a sudden, it feels like it is happening because it is turning into more demand for U.S. soybeans, at least. And who knows, Ben, what's your gut telling you about that Safrina corn crop? Is there going to be any early season issues that we're going to have to really pay attention to on the Safrina corn crop?
Early season issues may be right now a little bit too wet up in Mato Grosso, the northern parts of Brazil. Maybe that's an issue, but they got the beans in you know, great timing. They got them out with, you know, some issues there, but as of right now, that there's actually corn popping up, you know, ankle high in Mato Grosso at the moment. So that crop is underway at the moment, and you know, there's lot of weather to work through, a lot of a lot of time yet for that crop. But at the same time, the global demand has been expanding, and it's going to continue to be supportive. We're also, seems like we're in the midst of an acreage battle too. Here in the southern part of the U.S., we start to hit the field in 2 to 3 weeks. So this market's on a mission to get those acres bought. Really running out of time, and I think with that shorter than expected crop coming out of South America, it's really on a mission here this week, and probably the first part of February to get that job done.
Right. Okay. So we've got the issue with the acreage battle that may be developing in here, Ben. But at the same time, the bull spreads are working in corn and soybeans, trying to pull those bushels out of the bin because of the demand that's coming in. This is a very dynamic type of a situation when we've got the acreage issue going on at the same time that the bull spreads are working and the demand is coming back. It feels kind of, man, I hate to say this on a Friday afternoon after we posted solid gains. And if you ask me, we've got the old crop corn contracts into some very thin air, but it's hard to deny that the upside momentum is there, and I don't know who steps in front of it and starts selling it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that kind of showed the action this week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we were wavering a little bit in those bull spreads. Well, then we got confirmation on that Thursday export sales that the demand's there. Global buyers are coming in. They're worried about that supply situation, what's going to be available to them, and those spreads reverse turned right around. It seemed like we may have been putting some near-term tops in early in the week, but once again we got the confirmation of daily export sales, weekly export sales were solid, and firmed those spreads right back up and indicated we need more global acres.
Yeah, even there was even wheat that showed up in the weekly export sales report that came in above trade expectations, well above my expectations. And if we can get wheat to participate in this, a bit of a demand surge, then we've really got something to talk about, don't we?
Yeah, we really do. I mean, wheat prices have held on pretty well. Those charts look a little more negative than corn and soybeans at the moment, but any more tensions in that Black Sea region, that wheat market, that could get awful crazy here going forward. Our condition ratings here on our winter wheat not looking so hot. Finally seeing some relief there with some of the snow and a little bit of precip, but we're also going to get some very high winds here next week, 40-mile-an-hour winds across the Central Plains with these storms. That's going to cause some issues on that wheat. But we're sitting at, 30% good to excellent in Kansas. Very poor. Yeah, and 16% in Oklahoma, 43% poor to very poor. Texas only 7% good to excellent. I mean, not looking at very good stands here. And with availability coming out, the questions in Ukraine, corn planting, shipments coming out of there. That wheat market gets pretty explosive here.
Yeah, exactly. Now, that you just made a really good point about Ukraine situation having an influence on corn. You go back to 8 years ago to 2014. It wasn't really a corn situation. Ukraine was developing as an exporter. But since that time, they've become a very good supplier of product into China in particular. If there's any disruption in supplies of corn coming out of Ukraine, that could be a big plus for the U.S. market too, right?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, it's a question if they're even going to be able to get in the ground, let alone, to ship it out. So 16%, there's 16% of the export market in corn. I mean, that's a big chunk. 12% of the wheat. So there's a lot on the table here with this situation and in that Black Sea region, and it's likely not to go away anytime soon with all the military. I mean, this seems like a longer-term event.
It certainly does. It certainly does. All right, we are talking with Ben Cash from Bauer Trading. We've covered a lot of ground. We've covered some South American crop issues. We're starting to touch into the geopolitical issues. Let's talk a little bit about China when we come back, Ben. What if we do get past the Olympics and China says, okay, everybody's taking their eyes off us. Now's the time to make a move on Thailand. So we've got a lot to talk about. Plus, what do we do about it? Risk management. That's next right here, AgriTalk.
Time now for some news of note from Pro Farmer. The Biden administration yesterday called for the first UN Security Council meeting on the situation along the Russia-Ukraine border. Farmers in the U.S., Brazil, and Argentina are holding back grain and soybean sales in a bet that prices will continue to rise. Together, the three account for more than three-quarters of global corn and soy exports. The International Monetary Fund said China's economic recovery lacks balance and momentum has slowed. Chinese government revenue from land sales climbed a modest 3.5% last year. That's a sharp downturn. The Biden administration concluded that a global semiconductor shortage will persist until at least the second half of the year. EPA has finalized its plan to delay compliance deadlines under the renewable fuel standard. And the world's largest spirits maker is running low on some of its products, saying soaring pandemic demand is depleting stocks of Crown Royal whiskey, among others. News of note taken from pages of Pro Farmer. Try ProFarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Are you sure about that still thinking in the afternoon part, especially on a Friday afternoon?
Oh, definitely.
Oh.
Even more so on a Friday afternoon. Yes.
You feel like you're getting into the zone, finally. We have completed 95% of the shows for the week as of this moment. And just now you feel like you're really getting zoned in for the week?
I'm so zoned in, I've done a little research. Here's something else Mark Twain may or may not have said. You ready? One day, man will carry computers in their pockets, making the sophistry of education lachrymose and irrelevant. Who knew? A soothsayer, as well as storytelling guy.
How about a storyteller?
That could work. Wordsmith,
that'll work.
Perhaps. Yeah. Yarn spinner. Yarn spinner, if you please.
All right. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That's Davis.
Hello,
and everybody should know that a very nice gentleman just stopped by here at the Midland Empire Ag and Rural Lifestyle Show, where KFEQ has been very generous in providing me with a nice little spot here to broadcast the show from today. Very nice gentleman just walked by. Davis, he said, listen, you guys, love your show. Love it. Listen to it twice a day, every day. Love it. Oh, and say hi to that handsome newsman Michaelson for me.
Clearly this feller is well-informed and highly intelligent. Obviously. Obviously. Hello, sir. Thank you for noticing.
Yeah, and then, of course, he followed it up with the question, is he really as handsome as he thinks he is?
As handsome as you think I am, triple it. And you're about getting there. That's just the reality. And I'm a newsman, okay?
Locked into telling the truth. Locked into telling the truth. Cannot lie about it. All right. We are having a conversation with Ben Cashbauer Trading. Before we get back to that, let's go ahead and recap where the markets closed.
Chip, March hard red winter wheat futures 8 3/4 cents higher today, 802 1/4. March soft red wheat gained 9 1/4, 786 1/4. March corn futures 10 3/4 cents higher, 636 at the close. May corn jumped 10 1/4, 633 1/4. March soybean futures 21 3/4 cents higher, 1470. May beans surged 21 1/4 to close at 1475 1/4. March cotton 213 points higher by the close, 123.76. On the livestock side, February fat cattle 87 1/2 cents higher, 138.70. March feeders firmed 12 1/2 cents to 159.62 1/2. And February lean hogs, 90 cents higher, 87.92 and one half. That's your quick market recap. Now back to you.
Thank you very much, Davis. Appreciate it. Okay. Yeah, as I said, we are having a conversation with Ben Cash today from Bauer Trading. Ben is a regular here on KFEQ. I'm sitting in their booth down here having a good time, talking with plenty of listeners, having a good time. Ben, I was looking back over my notes, and we were talking a lot about demand and how demand is coming back into the market, which suggests that that concern is growing over the supply coming out of South America. And then I realized, but wait a minute, this dollar has started to show some pretty impressive strength. When does that get in the way, or does a stronger dollar get in the way of this export demand, Ben?
Yeah, I think we're in a unique situation where it really doesn't get in the way. I think we're at a point with so many cross currents that demand needs to be met, and there's so many supply uncertainties as far as production issues out there, whether it be weather, geopolitical, that I think at this point, you know, the market's completely ignoring the value of the dollar for the most part on the grains as well as livestock. Some of the other markets, you know, metals, they're taking a hit. They're factoring in the value of the dollar. But these other ag markets in particular are completely ignoring it because there is enough noise here, you know, as far as supply concerns and production levels. A lot of question marks out there that really can't afford, you know, to sit back and let the value of the dollar factor in if you're going to be a buyer of these grains. You know, it just hasn't seen these corrections all seem very shallow. So when you do see a correction, it seems to be a buying opportunity at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, Ben, that's good. All good points. And it gets back to what we were talking about before. I mean, if you're in charge, if you're in another country and you're in charge of making sure that you've got a plentiful supply and everything is adequately inventoried, you've got that one job to do. Don't let the dollar get in the way of making sure that you've got everything that you need. Okay, China was in on new crop beans today. There's all kinds of uncertainty, and I'll use a word that you used earlier, Ben, anxiety over what China is going to do with Thailand after we get through with Taiwan, after we get through the Winter Olympics here over the next couple of weeks. How big of a risk do you guys think that is?
I think it's the biggest risk to the soybean market at this point. We went through it with the trade war with Trump. You know, there, if you don't have China in your market, you don't have a market. So, if we tensions rise again, it's a very, you know, especially at the levels we're at, you know, we're testing $15 beans. There's a lot of downside, you know, potential to the soybean market if tensions do flare up there. Also, you have a South American crop coming online here during the, you know, Olympics. So there are exportable supplies hitting the pipeline as well. Yep. So, you know, we got to keep that in the back of our mind. And, not only, you know, with Taiwan, but, you know, China and Russia are somewhat in cahoots, you know, to a point, you know, is the situation in Ukraine could flare, you know, tensions up with China as well. So, yeah, there's some risk to these markets. We got a lot of risk premium because of weather, because of the geopolitical.
Yep.
We're talking about all the bullish stuff. There is a lot of stuff that can come, black swans that can come in here, and these markets can sell off pretty quickly, especially with
the
amount of longs that are in the market here. So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's get into that a little bit, Ben. What if you were watching for two or three things that would suggest to you that the upside momentum is going to roll out of these markets, what might they be?
Choppiness, spreads, starting to bear spread the market, fronts aren't gaining on the deferreds, would be a sign, very high volume throughout the day, you know, oddly high volume with choppiness. You know, that would be another indicator. And, you know, closing off, you know, last 10, 20 minutes, you know, not seeing good closes, you know, into the session. So, you know, that'd be a little concerning as well. But
yeah,
spreads, definitely the language of the market. I'd definitely be closely watching spreads, but even put options. You know, if the put options start gaining serious value, you know, that's something to watch as well, too.
Okay. All right. Very good. So What do you want to do with corn and soybeans to take some of the risk out? Are you doing anything? What do you feel the urgency level to do? And go ahead and talk old crop, 21 crop, but I'm most interested on 22.
Yeah, right now I don't see a problem with laying puts underneath here, given the aggressive move up we've had. You know, one thing you got to look at too is the volatility we've been seeing, so these options are not cheap. So you definitely can use weekly or short-dated monthly options to your advantage in this kind of market environment as we keep grinding higher. But, you know, laying protection in there, you know, is definitely something to think about at these levels because some kind of news, you know, political situation could arise out of nowhere overnight that could bring some downside to the market. So, so once again, you know, the weekly options, especially going into crop report or something like that, weekly option, if you've got a lot of unsold bushels, I don't see a problem with putting something on like that, you know, just for the crop report. But right. You know, we do seem supported here, but you know, there is some substantial downside risk given the overbought situation. And you can also do that on new crop. New crop, as far as corn goes, you know, we touched on Ukraine. I think corn needs to be well supported. We see natural gas price rally here again. I don't see nitrogen coming down anytime soon. So corn, you know, needs to be elevated. We got an acreage battle going on. I would still look at probably the monthly options there on the new crop corn. They offered them, you know, offer them every month. So that's something to look at. It's just hard to really get short in a futures contract at this point in the market. And if you do, you know, use a covered call on it. You know, this market is still seems like it has some upside and very limited resistance, you know, to a point. It's just been quite impressive.
Yes, absolutely it has been. Only got about a minute left. Do you feel any urgency to do anything in either cattle or hogs, Ben?
Those also seem a little lofty to me. I think there's some downside. The cash market is in disconnect. You know, from what we got April hogs, cash price is 15 cents under the board. So, yeah, I think there is some urgency on hogs. Exports aren't quite there on hogs, too. We're seeing that lag the past 2 years as China's rebuilt their herd. So there is some downside there. Cattle, really strong exports. But, you know, once again, I still think if we roll over in the stock market, cattle can take a hit as well. So put options in those livestock would definitely be a strong risk management strategy.
Yeah. Maybe the dollar would have a little bit more influence on those on beef and pork exports than on corn and soybeans at this point, just because of the supply uncertainty out of South America. Ben, great conversation, buddy. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Hey, yeah, appreciate you having me on. Good talking to you guys.
Yep, great to talk with you. That's Ben Cash, Bauer Trading, over in Indiana. And like I said, he's a regular here at KFEQ. When we come back, we're going to wrap up our broadcast from Midland Empire Ag and Rural Lifestyle Show in St. Joseph, Missouri. We'll see what Davis has got on his mind, what Davis wants to talk about as we wrap things up. And who knows, maybe we'll get a guest appearance from some of the livestock here.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
No. Well, you... No. No. Hashtag it AgriTalk. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson here. Chips on the road down in Missouri, Mr. Flory. Describe the scene down there. Describe the scene.
Describing the scene right now, we had a great conversation on this morning show with Bruce Mers from Mers Farm Equipment. I'm looking at the farm equipment straight across the aisle from me. We also had Will Cross Seeds on this morning. We talked with the people. I had a great conversation with the guys from For Land's Sake this morning. These guys are reclaiming ground that you know, maybe was ignored for a little bit too long, got in the CRP for 15 years and wasn't managed, that kind of stuff. Yeah, they get out there and get it back for you. It was a great conversation with all three of the guys today.
Well, and let's jump over to that land thing just a little bit, because this is 2 days in a row now that we've spoke with representatives from companies who are involved in hooking up farmers with hunters and making all that happen so that some of those acres can be potentially rented out. Specifically, we were talking mostly about hunters in yesterday's show. And in our own landowner survey, we found that more, not many, but more and more farmers are at least open to the idea, and some of them are definitely taking advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people, I should, you know, we talked about this just a little bit yesterday. Outdoors on the Farm has been a project of mine for 20 years, 22 years now.
Davis, an obsession, started a project. It's been an obsession. You love Outdoors on the Farm. It's the other AgriTalk is what it is. I just don't want to talk about it.
I love it. You know, one thing that I don't think that I mentioned yesterday, and I haven't talked about this for a long time, but we heard the really cool theme song to Outdoors on the Farm that was playing yesterday.
This you is know, great, everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. That was written and recorded by country music sensation Justin Moore.
Justin Moore. See, and here's the thing, everybody. I mean, I'm sure that you envision Chip and I, you know, we lead this sort of celebrity lifestyle. We're hobnobbing. You know, Jennifer Aniston was over hanging out the other day. Ben Affleck and, you know, Abe Vigoda used to come over all the time when the show first started. It was awesome. No, nothing like that. We're just a couple of regular schmoes who really, really love what we do. And, Chip, you are one of these people who just has a gift. I don't know what it is. Is it the gift of gab? Is it your introspective nature? Is it your just magnetic personality? But, yeah, you wound up hanging because you've gone fishing with Justin Moore.
Well, just once.
Uh-huh.
A little bit of hunting on Outdoors on the Farm.
Yeah.
No, it's been it was really fun to get to know him a little bit and to spend some time with Justin, no question about it. But the whole Outdoors on the Farm project has been just like you said, it's been a bit of an obsession, but it's definitely a passion.
For sure.
And talking about managing ground, managing the land, developing habitat while still being focused on farming has always been something real interesting to me. And finding a way to generate some revenue on ground that just isn't doing it with row crops or wheat or cattle or anything.
Yep.
Find a way to generate some revenue. And that's what we're talking about yesterday on Outdoors on the Farm with the guys from Base Camp Leasing. It's
Base Camp Leasing,
it's really cool, and it's a lot of fun. And the guys over at For Land's Sake, they come in with the heavy equipment. They come in and look at a project that has been ignored for too long, and they reclaim that ground, get that environment back to where it needs to be, whether you're talking about for recreational purposes or for row crop production. Whatever that environment is that you want, they come back in and manage it to get it to it. It was a really fun conversation.
For sure, for sure. Something that keeps coming up, and I talked to Dr. Vince Malanga about this the other day in your absence, and it's what I brought up before about that two-pronged attack from China and Russia. And I just want to go back to that for 1 second because I can't get it out of my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any. I wrote about it in the December Landowner, and I kind of took some of the quotes from Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin and compared them through the month of December. You know, and you might recall Putin saying things to the effect of large-scale war in Europe and, you know, this sort of stuff. And then the next week we hear similar stuff from China. I don't think either Russia or China thinks that they're going to get a very hard-nosed response, at least initially, if they just kind of keep boiling that frog. And the idea that you would then take that frog boiling and split it into two fronts, and Malanga brought in a third component, which I hadn't even considered, which is Iran.
Iran.
Which has its own designs on, you know, on neighboring properties. I mean, this could really turn into something. And we know that the three of them are in cahoots. Ben Cash was exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think it Davis, could be
I think we need to get past the idea that this could turn into something, because it is something.
That's a good point.
Like you said, when you start connecting the dots and kind of gaining a visual on what is happening out there, I don't think there's any question that it is going to be an effort of distractions and advancements, whether it be Russian troops making a move across the Ukrainian border, while China launches a test missile over the Sea of Japan or something. I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know.
That's exactly.
But
the
you
kind of
start
thing.
Getting those diversionary tactics to go along with real advancements. Yeah, we're not talking about it could develop into something anymore. It is something that President Joe Biden needs to take the leadership and get some sort of a global alliance in place that makes it dang clear to Russian President Putin and to Chinese President
Xi Jinping.
Xi, that if they take that strategy, there is going to be some grave consequences to pay for that. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but it is something that we need to see happen. Hey, I'm signing off from the Midland Empire Ag and Rural Lifestyle Show down in St. Joseph, Missouri. We got Machinery Pete Monday morning on AgriTalk.